Studio 360.
Hey, I'm Hanif Abdurraqib, sitting in for Kurt Anderson this week. I'm a writer, a poet, and a proud Midwesterner living in Columbus, Ohio.
My mother came home to her children's skin knee raw. She sat in the bathtub for hours and bled into the water.
Ashley C. Ford was born and raised in Fort Wayne, Indiana, though she lives in Brooklyn now. She's known for her profiles of celebrities like Missy Elliott, Serena Williams, and Anne Hathaway in magazines like Marie Claire and Allure. She's also known for her personal essays, like this one from 2012, called What Burns in the Pit.
While she stared into the space between herself and the walls, her body purged its sin, staining the off-white fiberglass. My brother and I sat in the hallways, making sure she wasn't giving up on her breathing, that she wasn't giving up on us. On the other side of the door, my mother was praying to water, repenting in spontaneous expulsions, oblivious to the world growing red around her.
Toni Morrison is the most iconic Black writer from the Midwest, but with each generation, that cohort grows. One of my favorite contemporary writers from this region is Ashley C. Ford. The recent passing of Toni Morrison was on our minds when I talked to Ashley. I asked what her first exposure to Morrison's work was.
Ooh, it was The Bluest Eye. I want to say I was 12. I got in trouble a lot in middle school for what I would call speaking up, right, what they called insubordination.
Right.
And I would get sent to in-school suspension a lot, where they kept running out of ways to punish me because I liked the things they use to punish kids in general. And so I started spending my detention time in the library, and I picked up The Bluest Eye. And I think what drew me to it was that there was a Black girl on the cover. And it looked almost like when my mom would show me photos of her and her sisters when they were little. Plus, I never really saw Black girls on the cover of books unless it was Jessie on the cover of the Babysitter's Club books, which she rarely got her own book or a cover,
right,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Or it had, or it was like Addie, the slave, you know,
right.
Like, and so I picked it up. I started reading it. And I kept reading it. It's the only book that I've ever finished and then started again,
oh, wow.
Like immediately. I couldn't really understand all of it, but the pieces that I was getting, it just felt like a puzzle I was unlocking. And the more I read it, the more the puzzle unlocked. And I felt like the more I saw myself. And I loved that feeling. And have never gotten over it.
Could you describe the plot for people who haven't read it or can't remember?
The Bluest Eye is essentially about a young Black girl, Pecola, navigating colorism, abuse, and just trying to find a way to understand the world around her that unfortunately keeps leading back to herself as a root problem or issue with her interactions with other people.
Is there a character or a moment of the story that you recall resonating with you when you first read it?
Yes, with Pecola and the cat. There's a scene where she's crying and she's comforted by this cat. And I don't want to really like say like too much around it, but something ends up happening to the cat. There's like, it's a really sad moment. And it was, you know, I think sadder than I thought the book could get, or that I thought books could get at that time. And there was something validating in that sadness, because I knew that sadness. I had been that sad. And I felt like something was wrong with me for being the age I was and knowing the kind of sadness that I did, that I was pretty sure no one else knew. And I read that scene, like I read that part, and I just understood so deeply, like, the sadness of feeling finally loved or liked or comforted in the way that you need, and then having that moment change or become twisted or become almost unbearably painful. It was a hard part to read, but it was also the part that stuck with me and that sticks with me still. When I think of the book, I think of that moment.
Beloved. So Beloved was my first Toni Morrison book. It came out in 1987. I loved how, of course, Ohio showed up in it.
Yes.
It was the first major book I'd read that where Ohio was a setting, which makes me think about Toni Morrison in Midwestern identity and how kind of unafraid she was to populate her books with the Midwest and Black Midwestern characters or Black people situated or striving for the Midwest. So I'm thinking about other Black Midwestern writers who perhaps have been a guiding light for you. Do you have any that jump to mind outside of Toni Morrison?
I mean, there are a couple. Mari Evans is absolutely in that list.
The great poet Mari Evans.
Yes. Mari Evans isn't just Black Midwestern. She's Hoosier.
Right.
Baby,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And remained a Hoosier, which does not surprise me.
At 90, she was 97 when she passed away in Indianapolis.
Yes. It's a very low-stress life.
Yeah, it is.
It's a very, very low-stress life to live in Indiana. And honestly, Roxane Gay.
Right.
Roxane was a way for me to see what was possible, whether I wanted it or not, you know?
Yeah.
Seeing a Black woman write about her body out of the Midwest was just, I was blown away. I'm still blown away. There's just not enough of us talking about just existing in the Midwest, if that makes sense, existing in the Midwest, like not being in conflict with the Midwest, but just being there. And she was able to write about that in a way that made me feel like writing about it could mean something to someone else and like it could be useful.
Right.
And so having people like Mari Evans and Toni and Roxane write about it and talk about it, having Eve Ewing write about it and talking about it, like it means a lot. And I love that their voices are part of that now because I need it. I still need it.
As a writer and creative yourself, how do you feel like you've done, not that this is your job, but how do you feel like you've done in your attempts to archive and celebrate Black Midwestern life?
I do think that you have to be proud of where you're from, right? And you have to rep where you're from a little bit. I'm very adamant when people try to write things down in bios or introduce me as a New York writer or a Brooklyn writer that I correct that.
Absolutely.
I love living in Brooklyn, but I'm a Hoosier girl through and through, Indiana baby. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I talk about it, but I talk about it because I know what that would have meant to me when I was 14. And so I think maybe in that way, I try to sort of like expand the visibility of Black Midwesternness is that I really do try to encourage people that like, this isn't, why are you acting like you're ashamed that you're from Wisconsin? No, let them get to know Wisconsin through you.
Right.
Talk about what it was like.
Absolutely.
I've had quite a few people be like, well, you know, Ashley, you're from Indiana, so you probably grew up around like all white people. And I'm like, no, I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
not at all.
Actually, it was the opposite. I did not grow up around all white people. My school system was something like, I mean, at its highest point, I think my school system was 90% Black.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, I grew up in Indiana and I grew up next to, I drove past cornfields every day and all the people around me were Black. So, you know, you don't know anything about my experience. And it's okay that you don't know, but I have to say something about it.
Right.
I got to talk about it and what it was like.
You've built at least part of your stellar career by being exceptionally skilled at profiling just large pop culture figures or athletes or artists, Serena Williams, Missy Elliott, of course, most recently Anne Hathaway, in making those people feel as though they are talking to a friend they've had for a very long time. How do you prepare for that? How do you get into that zone? How do you get people into that zone with you?
I'm Midwestern, baby. Like, come on. You know how we do it.
Circles back. It's like full circle.
You know how we do it. In Midwest, you have to be able to talk to everybody because everybody's going to talk to you at some point. And so you learn how to talk to everybody. And the worst thing you could do, in at least where I grew up, the worst thing you could do is make somebody feel uncomfortable.
Right.
So I think my whole life, I've been a person who wanted people to feel comfortable in my presence. It was very, very, very important to me.
Is there anyone you've been nervous to interview?
Missy. Missy Elliott, yes. Missy Misdemeanor.
This is a Missy Elliott one-time exclusive.
Yeah, that didn't come through at all in the piece. It felt like y'all were like kin. You know?
I mean, it felt like that once she was sitting there and we were talking with one another. But there was like a solid 15 minutes where I was sitting in the studio before she showed up. And I was not chill. I was not okay. I wasn't cool. I was having a little bit of a mini freak out. She just means so much to me. She means so much to me. There's just so many people who feel this way about her. And the strange thing is she kind of doesn't know it. Like, she does a little bit, but not really.
Circling back to books, you have a book coming.
I do.
Somebody's Daughter, a memoir. How difficult has memoir been? Just the art of memoir is very, it's about excavation and about perhaps reconsideration of our past histories. Has that been difficult or joyful or somewhere at the intersection of those two things?
Honey, I'm never doing this again. This isn't like Cher going on tour. This is like, you know, where she's always like, I'm never doing this again. And then she comes back. That's not what I'm talking
about. Comes
back. I'm not writing a memoir again. This has been the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I've been through some tough shit. I ain't no punk. And this at times has broken me down to the brake pads. Like, this is the book that made me stop writing for a little while. Wow. Like, I just had to just stop writing altogether for a little while in order to sort of find my way back into it, because it was harrowing. I do not regret it, but yes, harrowing. It was really, really tough for me. It is still tough for me.
So before we go, there is one last very important thing I wanted to talk to you about.
Yes. Let's go there, baby. Let's go there. Right now.
The king of movie soundtracks, Mr. Kenny Loggins.
The sultan of soundtracks, okay? The king of yacht rock. Yes, Kenny Loggins.
You are maybe the biggest Kenny Loggins fan I know.
Thank you.
I hear that when you were at Ball State, you listened to Highway to the Danger Zone every morning before class your first year.
Oh, my God. Wait, how did you know that? I did. Oh my God, I did. My roommate was like, are you serious? But I did. I listened to it every morning on my way to class. To be fair, I started it the first semester because my first class was always at 8 a.m. And I really needed to like pump myself up to get there on time. And I mean, Kenny just works.
What about Kenny Loggins like really gets you?
I'm going to be honest, okay? It's emotional and it's lyrical. but I started listening to Kenny Loggins because a teacher gave me a Kenny Loggins tape because I was scared of the dark. And him and his wife had been playing this tape for their much younger child called Return to Pooh Corner, which was a tape of lullabies that Kenny Loggins did. And it's not just lullabies, like regular lullabies. It's like he covers some popular songs and turns them into lullabies, like St. Judy's Comet.
Long come see St. Judy's Comet roam across the sky, leave a spray of diamonds in its wake.
John Lennon's Love.
Love is wanting to be loved.
The Rainbow Connection.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side?
What was really hard for me in middle school, and even a little bit before that, was this really, really intense collision of my childhood innocence and love of whimsy and all of those things and puberty, like my body. Like those things just poof, right into each other. And I wasn't ready to let go of childhood. I wasn't ready to not be a little girl or like be somebody's little girl. You know, like I didn't want that. And so I feel like my body was betraying me. And then everything became scary. The life became scary. The night became scary. The dark became scary. And I was falling asleep in the class and the teacher gave me this tape because his kid could sleep in the dark now, okay? Yeah, she was five and she got it together and she was done. And I needed the tape.
Why are there so many?
I was listening to this tape every night.
Why are there so many?
I just realized, like, I really love this guy's voice. And then his song started coming on the radio. In Fort Wayne, there was 97.3 WMEE, and it's the soft rock station. And I would turn it there, and every once in a while, I would hear a Kenny Loggins song, and I'd be like, oh my gosh.
Whenever I call you friend.
I asked my teacher if he had more Kenny Loggins music, and of course he did. He was like a 50-year-old Mormon. And he gave me all of this Kenny Loggins music to go home to and listen to. I didn't have my own CD player at the time. I had to listen to it on this like old computer in our kitchen. And I would just play it out loud in the house. I loved it so much, and it didn't bother anybody in the house to where they made me turn it off. And so I listened to it all the time, and it just never stopped. Most music at some point, I'm like, okay, I'm done with that. Like, I've been listening to that album. I'm done with it. It never stopped. I listened to Kenny Loggins all the time.
That was Ashley C. Ford rhapsodizing about Kenny Loggins. By the way, that memoir Ashley mentioned, the one that nearly did her in, it's called Somebody's Daughter, and it's coming out in 2021. Keep an eye out for it.